comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, bringing faith to the doubtful, doubt to the faithful, friend to the friendless, odor to the odorless, calling lame radio to rise and talk. This is Dr. Ian Bonnet on Coast to Coast for just a couple of shows. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America. And to the hostile alien armies hovering silently in space, hiding confidently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmosphere. Remember, as always, eat the Canadians first. They are much tastier. And to the Canadians, by the way, do us a solid and the rest of North America scream loudly so we'll have more time to run. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers and all the fathers who had to act like mothers, too. Let's not forget. I hope your Mother's Day is uncomplicated. Sometimes holidays like this can bring up bad memories. My own beloved mother is not likely listening. I'm not sure she's ever heard me do Coast to Coast. Doesn't really fit with her sketch. But her friends do. So Josie and Fran, let my mom know I mentioned her. My favorite Mother's Day tweet today was from a priest friend of mine, Tim Shank, who said, "Happy Mother's Day to psychiatrists. This is your Super Bowl." And that was pretty funny. Anyway, since we last chatted, I moved to Phoenix to get my PhD. I've become fascinated by the mysteries of the Mojave Desert. Our main guest tonight is two, and he's doing the hard work on the research, the heavy lifting you're going to enjoy next hour. ML Behrman will tell us more about the strange, freaky, deadly things that are happening in the desert at this hour. And if you are wise, you will take his word for it. If you are driving through a desert tonight as you listen to this show, you might want to keep a tape handy. Because, you know, the soundtrack to Frozen or something a little upbeat, it might be needed in the middle of some of these stories. Some of them may just be a little too scary to be in the desert and hearing them at the same time. So, you know, pocket that for later. You have a hall pass on this, but for the rest of you, you're going to love it. Special guest Derek Smalls of Spinal Tap later this hour will finally explain why the legendary hard rock band has a history of drummers that have died from spontaneous human combustion. Sometime in the future, I will also thank all of the podcasters and other radio show hosts that have had me on as guests while I've been publishing these last couple of years. I don't want to leave anybody off the list, so I'll do that sometime soon. We just don't have enough time to thank all of the Coasties for putting up so many kind words on social media, like Michelle Langer-Lynn or Susan Lafreniere, currently on a shoot in Europe. But I might just throw in a few names throughout the night. So thank you all, and feel free to keep in touch on Twitter at Deacon Punnett. And I always said that I might come back on for a special occasion or a medical emergency, such as if the real hosts of the show were on a plane together and they all ordered the fish or something, like in the movies, and they were all incapacitated and somebody needed to land at this puppy. But otherwise, this is a big experiment. I have gotten my tinnitus under control enough to think that I might be able to do 4 hours with headphones and not pay for it too much on Monday morning. I'll let you know next week. I'll be in for George Knapp. Thank you, George Norrie, for letting me come back on. Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyne, been wonderful to talk to you all this week. I think that's enough housekeeping for now. Chris Boros did a nice job producing the show. In advance, I'll say that so I don't forget him later. Crypto news and a visit from an old friend who has become very famous in the Marvel Universe. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so next hour, our main guest, a man who is tracking the mysteries of the Mojave, so you don't have to, Derek Smalls of Spinal Tap, later on this hour. But first, some crypto news. It's been 6 years since Julian Assange moved into the Ecuadorian embassy in London, but it may be checkout time soon. You may remember reports that his phone and internet and visiting privileges from famous people like Pamela Anderson was supposed to end back in March. But this week, Ecuador's foreign minister suggested that her government may be depriving Assange of the political asylum it granted him back in 2012 and will hand him over to British and then presumably U.S. authorities. That, according to the World Socialist website on Saturday, the Ecuadorian government and Britain have the, quote, intention and the interest that this will be resolved. She added that the two sides were working to reach a definite agreement on Assange. Speaking of unwanted guests, in Ahwatukee, Arizona, just a few minutes from where I sit, I can almost see it out my window, an anonymous homeowner's motion detector went off on Saturday night. There was an alarm. The anonymous woman said, I knew there was somebody in the yard. And she told azfamily.com, she jumped out of bed and called 911. I called 911. I was scared, she said. At first, she suspected that somebody was trying to break into her house. But that's when things got really weird. Instead, the would-be burglar decided to spend a little quality time sniffing her laundry outside. Police were on the scene within minutes to make sure the homeowner was safe. The homeowner believes it's the same laundry-sniffing man who was caught on camera in her backyard the day after Christmas, doing the exact same thing, smelling their laundry. The man got away before police could catch him, and they have offered no explanation on how much time has passed between his backyard visits. I have a theory. I think maybe before this guy goes prowling for laundry, he has to be three sheets to the wind, but I don't know that for sure. Anyway, I hope the long arm and hammer of the law catches up to him soon. I'm glad the woman came out with the video. Maybe now the tide will turn against him and he'll decide he has nothing to gain. That is all. What chain has the best coffee? 2018's brand of the year for the coffee shop category in Harris Poll's 30th annual Equitrend study is Krispy Kreme. Really good coffee for anybody who's had it. Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts came in second and third, respectively. Don't tell that to any of our tasty Canadian friends, however. Anything other than Tim Hortons is fighting words. According to Fox 9 News in the Twin Cities, the remains of a unique two-headed fawn that was found in Minnesota a couple years ago are going to be put on display. The fawn, which authorities believe died at birth, was found by a mushroom hunter. Oh, yeah, baby. He's probably seen a few, depending what mushrooms they're hunting for, might have seen a few two-headed beasts out there. Anyway, this is the first recorded case of conjoined two-headed deer. The two-headed fawn has been mounted by a taxidermist and will be on display at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources headquarters in St. Paul. Speaking of Two-Face, Gotham has been renewed by Fox for another year. Great series. I'm a little behind. And then you heard Brooklyn Nine-Nine moved to NBC. Fremulon, pretty cool. Meanwhile, in the Marvel Comics universe, Infinity War is on track to be the biggest, baddest movie of all time. It's already the highest grossing superhero movie, already eighth on the all-time list just after a couple of weeks. The next stop for Infinity War would be breaking the $2 billion mark around the world, becoming the first summer film to ever do that. By the way, biggest thrill I had this week was finding out that Gail Ann Hurd, executive producer of Fear the Walking Dead, The Walking Dead, Terminator, T2, The Abyss, Aliens, she follows me on Twitter. Probably because I was tweeting out about the Arsenal of Premier League. I'm a big Arsenal fan. In fact, her Twitter handle is at Gunner Gale. So we're both gooners. She's just made many of my favorite shows of all time. It was a pleasure. I just pleasure watched Aliens again a couple of weeks ago. If you haven't seen it for a while, go back. Speaking of heroic women, Brie Larson as Captain Marvel is in production, as you have likely heard, and so perhaps is Ms. Marvel, known by her other name, Kamala Khan. IO9 reports that Kevin, and I always get, like, people pronounce his name, it's Feige, right? has said that the Marvel Cinematic Universe definitely has plans in store for a Muslim superhero. I geeked for Deadpool 2 May 18th. I'll give you my review next Sunday when I sit in for George Knapp, who's on vacation, and Ant-Man and the Wasp coming in July. No surprise, then, that the largest exhibition ever staged at the Museum of Pop Culture in Seattle is Marvel Universe of Superheroes, featuring more than 300 original artifacts, including iconic artwork, costumes, props from such comics and films as Captain America, The Avengers, Jessica Jones, and many more. The artwork regarding Captain America and Jessica Jones includes my old friend and Coastie, David Mack, who joins us now. Hey, David.
Hey, Ian. It's great to be on the air with you.
And so, like, you know, I realized when I was writing this out here, I didn't know a lot about your bio, so I was trying to find out more about you. I didn't realize you went to Northern Kentucky University. But I did know that you did have Kabuki in, you were publishing the original, the comic book series, that your award-winning comic book series, which made you so famous the first time, while you were still in college. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I did it for my senior thesis in literature when I was in college. And it was coming out, it was being published while I was a student there.
I hope you got an A.
I did. Yeah, I knew when I went to college that I wanted to do comic books. I wanted to be a storyteller. You know, at the time, that college didn't have classes or a major in that kind of thing. So I just took all the courses I could and tried to integrate that and absorb that and kind of let that enrich my work and kind of funnel that right into my comic book work. So I was working professionally in comics when I started college, you know, throughout the whole time I was there. Oh, in college. Awesome.
Well, then, of course, you know, you're known for your work and your cover art that you've done for things like Daredevil, Alias, Green Arrow, Swamp Thing, and then graphic novels we talked about before on Coast to Coast, like you had various ones out from Philip K. Dick, and then you did you do a Star Trek graphic novel too?
No, but yeah, you mentioned Daredevil. I started as a writer on Daredevil at Marvel Comics. That was my first work for Marvel, and that was because of that Kabuki story that I did in college. When it was collected, I gave the story to a friend of mine now, but in 1995, I met Joe Quesada at a convention and just gave him my collected volume of Kabuki. And he read that and said he liked my writing on it. And he was known as an artist and he wanted to work with me as a writer. And so when he started taking over a few titles at Marvel, then called Marvel Knights, before he became editor-in-chief of Marvel, he asked me to write Daredevil. I took over writing it after Kevin Smith. So that was my very first work for Marvel, was as a writer with Joe Quesada doing the artwork. But it was because of that Kabuki book that I did when I was in college.
Well, pardon me for the bad lead on Star Trek, but somebody was telling me about that, and they said that you had done some work. They were certain on that, and so I sort of took their word for it. But, I mean, I know for you did Jessica Jones' work, and that is what led you into doing the or at least inspire. Well, how much of the artwork do you do for the Netflix series, the Marvel Netflix series? Are you actually, I mean, I know in the current season, I know you're doing the paintings because there's an artist character in the series and that's your work that he's doing,
right?
Supposedly, right? But in the beginning, did they actually use everything you did, or did they just, would they were inspired by it?
Yeah, so for the Jessica Jones series on Netflix, I worked on the opening titles of that. You know, it's based on a comic book that we did like 16 years ago or so, in which I did all of the covers to that comic book for Jessica Jones. It was a comic called Alias. I did all the covers. I did some of the interior artwork. And so when they were doing the opening titles for that, again, Joe Quesada told me they were trying to find, you know, people to do it in my style. So he said, just, you know, have David be involved in making the opening title. So
right.
I got to work with an amazing studio called Imaginary Forces. We did the opening titles for Jessica Jones, and we got nominated for an Emmy for it. So I went to the Emmys last year, which is something I wouldn't have been able to foresee.
But you got robbed. But you got robbed.
It was great to be nominated.
Yeah. Who won?
I was happy with the person that it was respectable opening titles. It was the Man in the High Castle, Philip K. Dick.
Oh, that was kind of cool. Yeah, those were cool. Yeah. Those were good credits. Okay.
Yeah. Those were really good titles. So it was respectable. It was really cool to be there to work with those people. And while I was there, you know, all the people from, you know, all the parties, you go to all the Netflix parties and everything. And I got to meet the showrunner for Jessica Jones, Melissa Rosenberg. And at the Emmys, she said, "Hey, you know, it's so cool to meet you because I were writing the script for the next season. And I put your name in the script, that there's an artist in it, but his artwork looks like your artwork and it's written in the script."
So instead, again, getting another David Mack type, why don't we just hire David Mack?
It was nice that it worked out that way. So I got to be on the set of, you know, the first two seasons of Jessica Jones. And I got to, when I went to the set, you know, the second time, you know, my artwork was all over the set, which was a really cool, you know, experience to be a part of.
Well, I like, you know, for a while you were tweeting out, you know, photos with you and Jessica Jones, and I don't know. I was waiting for you to show up in TMZ. I was like, you all were looking like you were hanging a lot together. So I'm surprised you didn't end up as an item.
It was really, she's super cool. Like, such an amazing actress, Kristen Ritter. It was great. It was cool. Like, when I went to the set, she was like, "Oh yeah, I finally, you know, this is how I tricked you into doing paintings of me." Because we did it this way for the set. And, you know, we recently went to the premiere, you know, I guess like a month ago when the new season just came out.
Sure.
And, you know, I got to be on the set of Daredevil as well.
That's cool.
You know, when that was filming, there's that Daredevil story I wrote like 20 years ago. It kind of has an origin of Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin, like his childhood on up in the story that I wrote for it back in 1998.
Oh, that's
and
too
that
cool.
Kind of, you know, made it into the TV series as well.
Oh, I love that. And then the Captain America titles was for Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that's right. I got to so if anyone's seen Captain America.
What, you forgot you did the titles for Captain America?
No, I'm glad you mentioned it.
Oh, okay.
And they are on exhibit right now at the Seattle Museum of Popular Culture. But that's an interesting case though, because they're not at the beginning like the opening titles.
Right.
They're at the end. So right at the end, if anyone's seen like all the black and white art,
it's awesome.
It comes up at the end. I did all the drawings for that and worked with a
really
studio
cool.
Called Swarovski.
That's really cool. In fact, so this exhibition that's going on in Seattle, I love Seattle. I used to go to Seattle to see and interview Anne Rule, the queen of true crime, before she died. I got her last couple of interviews with her. And so I got to visit, and I've never been able to get to the Museum of Popular Culture because it's always sold out. They had the Star Wars exhibit going at one time when I was there, and it was like, forget about it. There was no, it's like Super Bowl tickets. So do you know how long this exhibit for the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going on?
I don't have the dates handy, but I think it's all summer. I think you still have a chance to see it. It might be going through the majority of the year. I'm not sure.
I wondered about that because honestly, I mean, they probably will keep it on as long as they can, you know, as long as it's still bringing people in, but it's worth going to. And I have friends in Seattle who launched their own energy drink called Hyperphysics. So I've been meaning to visit. But what I really love is the fact that, and I think this is what sometimes people forget about Coast to Coast, there's a lot of creative people who listen to this show, like Chris Carter used to listen to the show and then write X-Files stuff. And that you told me once a long time, you used to like to paint late at night when you were listening to Coast. And I like the fact
right
that,
now. Yeah.
Yeah, really? Because it kind of like seeps into other things, I think, you know, where I just kind of see this little coasty influence.
Yeah, no, good friend of mine named Mike Avon Oeming. Like, you know, a lot of comic artists, a lot of people who are up all night writing and drawing and painting all through the night. Like, this show was like our best friend at night. You know, I started listening to it in maybe 97.
Wow.
And, you know, this is before, you know, there's as much internet content and, you know, Netflix and so on that you have now. So what a great live experience, a long form interview, you know, like that. You didn't really have that before. You didn't have podcasts and things like that before. So what an incredible friend that was to the artist that's working all night.
Well, I know this, then there'll be a few artists out there that will be inspired by next hour's topic about the Mojave Mysteries. And I will look to see your work popping up. I always love it when I do. It's either you or one of my kids is elbowing me and they're going, look, it's David Mack. It's David Mack, because you're everywhere. So we're if we have a right to be proud of you at Coast to Coast for all the work you've done, we're very proud of you.
No, that's very sweet of you. Yeah, a lot of those Coast to Coast vibes have, you know, I'm sure they've trickled in to a lot of the work that I've been doing overnight.
All right, well, keep up the good work, buddy. I'll be in touch. You know I will, okay?
Thanks so much. Well, have a great night.
Thank you. Derek Smalls, Spinal Tap, explains it all. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, my name's Ian Punnett. Spinal Tap, one of the loudest bands in history. And Derek Smalls, bass player, coming up next. He's got a new album out called Smalls Change, Meditations Upon Aging. Could it be that Derek Smalls of Spinal Tap has just turned 75? We'll find out more about the new album coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I was trying to think of the first time I met Derek Smalls. I think it was back in 1987 or something. I was doing the morning show on a rock radio station in the Quad Cities, and Spinal Tap was touring, and they were playing at the Tri-Lighter on Brady Street, and then again, I think, at 103 KDF on one of their later tours. But it's a distinct pleasure to be able to talk to Derek Smalls again now, especially with a solo album out. Good evening, Mr. Smalls.
Good evening, Ian. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah. How come we're not saying Sir Derek Smalls? How come that hasn't happened?
A question for the Queen, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
but
there's certain rock and rollers that have the inside track. I don't want to say anything about, politics or anything like that, because that's not what I get into. But obviously, if you're Rod Stewart, you've got the inside track. And I don't want to say who's bedding whom.
Okay.
Enough said. I've already said too much, haven't I?
Already said too much.
Yeah.
And yet,
I would... The Queen is a very lively 91-year-old, is all I'll say.
Yeah, but see, then there's three of you. There at least one of you. I think just the odds were that one of you in Spinal Tap would have broken through at that next level.
Yes, you would. I think that the number three has stood in our way in many instances. For example, many people bring up the sad, tragic, some would say, history of our drummers.
Yes.
And... it's a curse, we know that. Don't need to be explained to us. But I've discovered, I do pride myself in knowing a bit about the ways and the thoughts and the patterns of behavior of the Supreme Evil One. He's really hung up on the number three.
Is that what it is?
Yes. And so that's why the curse attached to the three of us. I did this record. Lot of great drummers, Taylor Hawkins from Foo Fighters, Chad Smith from Chili Peppers, Todd. I'm not blanking on Todd's last name.
Well, you're 75.
Yeah, I'm all of it from Styx, Jim Keltner, Greg Bissonette, really legendary drummers. I talked to every one of them after they did our sessions, and they all said, I've never felt better.
Oh, good.
Because that's number one, which he doesn't pay attention to.
Right.
So
I was a little worried that you were going to say that those guys had all exploded, and I hadn't heard that.
Exactly the opposite. It's the curse in reverse.
It's a curse. So I wonder whether this whole, for people who never saw the famous documentary.
I had this job.
Spinal Tap. Well, you say that.
Yes, I do.
Okay, but why? Why was it a hatchet job?
Well, he came to us, this filmmaker, and said, I'm a big fan of yours. I just want to follow you around on your first American tour.
Right.
We did 25, it was supposed to be 26, 25 cities tour. Just, Ian, you're a man of science.
Yes, I am.
About 92.83% of the time, we found our way to the stage straight away.
Right.
You didn't see that in the film, did you?
No, they didn't include that.
No.
They would include the one time you Exactly. Well, not the one time, but the several times, perhaps.
What, the so one time we didn't
just
make.
Only one time that's, we didn't make it.
That's what I call an agenda. He had an agenda.
Part of the deep state.
Well, I think, you know, to be fair, because also, you know, I mean, I got out of the pod most of the time.
Not right. You're talking about in the famous thing where you got locked in a pod
I got out of it most of the time.
And that's the one they use is the one where you didn't get out of the pod.
Of course. And here's why. I'm bending over both ways, to be fair, about this. I think he was a fan. I think he thought to himself, I've been a fan of this band. They've been around for 17 years. They haven't broken through. I'm going to help them break through by turning them into a laughingstock. And, you know, it takes a while to get to this, you know, more enlightened state where you just don't want to kill him. But my dad, the sainted Duff Smalls, said to me at one point when I was talking to him about this, he said, son, it's better to be a laughingstock than no stock at all.
Oh, okay. Good advice. A humble man, your father.
Well, he was a man of humble... he wasn't a humble man.
No.
He was a man of humble activity. He was a technological genius, but he was ahead of his time. He was, you know, today we've got these telephones that are mobile. We put them in our pockets. Now, what's the most germy place in your house, Ian?
Well, probably the toilet, wouldn't it not
be? It's your mobile phone.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. And you don't put that. I mean, you put that in your pocket. Now, in my dad's day, you would never think of putting your handset of your phone in your pocket where it's full of germs. But he would go around and sanitize people's telephones. He had a van.
Oh.
And people were more concerned about germs in those days. If you were alive today, you would have millions of dollars with an app where your phone would sanitize itself.
So he was just ahead of his time in that and realizing that.
He was humbly ahead of his time.
So the new album is called Smalls Change, yes. Meditations Upon Aging, and you are 75. Are you roughly the same age as the other guys in Spinal Tap?
Oh, I think David is younger. I think Nigel is younger. I may be the senior member. Never thought of that.
True story, then, that you kind of stumbled upon Spinal Tap when you were just walking down the street and you saw a notice
up
on a lamppost.
In Soho in London. In those days, there were notices on lampposts. Most of them were for young women who were available for an evening. But this was for a band that was looking for a bass player. And I picked the right notice.
Yeah. And then you didn't have initially big success, right? I mean, you went through a couple of changes and then the exploding drummer problem. True, correct?
We never had big success. Either.
Never.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
It's late at night. Nobody's listening. But, I mean, we had... The modicum of success that it takes to just keep plugging along.
You kept moving the sound around a little bit. So you went kind of for a flower power thing for a while.
We did that. We did the psychedelic thing when it was the thing. And then we discovered loud. And we thought, we can do this. This we can do. And so we became England's... at one point, we were England's loudest band. We invented 11 as a place to turn your amps up to. And then when Marshall, the film came out, and everybody knew, turn it up to 11, and Marshall came out with amps that went to 11, we had new amps engineered that went to infinity, which I think would be interesting to your audience. I think your audience is interested in infinity.
Yeah, I think so. Did you get money for the 11 thing from Marshall?
No, you can't get money for 11.
Can't get money for 11?
No. Okay. Someone else has already got the trademark on it.
On 11.
Yeah.
But then for a while, Spinal Tap kind of broke up, and then you were in a Christian band.
I was in a Christian rock band.
Had you converted then to, had you become a born-again Christian?
Well, yes and no. I mean, they really did believe that I was committed to the band. It was called Lamb's Blood. And so I got a tattoo of a fish, which they think is a thing. And we had a hit during that time. It was number 25 with a halo on the Christian charts called Whole Lotta Lord.
Whole Lotta Lord?
Whole Lotta Lord.
Based on the same song?
Great.
Based on the same Led Zeppelin song?
No, just the idea.
Okay, but, just the,
You know, just a screamer.
Okay.
I was lead singer in the band at that point, and I would come out off stage with a bit of a rough voice from just screaming, ah, hold on, Lord. And then I rejoined Tap, and it's like, what's this fish? So I had to have a new tattoo of a devil eating the fish.
Oh, I see. I was about to say.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing the fish tattoo. Where is it exactly?
Well, it was on my left shoulder, and I then, after all this, I thought, this is too much. So I had all of it removed, and this was early in the days when you could do that with laser removal. It was they used the brown laser, which they don't use anymore, and it was very painful.
Mm.
Don't use the brown laser. Yeah,
So then it was back to Spinal Tap. And what is the status of Spinal Tap right now? Are you all together?
Well, you know, this is interesting, Ian. I think your listeners would be more attuned to this than most. Do you remember Pangaea?
Yeah, I mean the part of the history of the planet, Pangaea?
Yes, exactly.
At one point where all the continents were connected.
Exactly. Very good. Yeah. So that was Tap. And then you turn around 3 million years later, and where's Pangaea? No, now there's South America and Africa and Australia.
Right.
And that's what we were like, except we kept reforming, and Pangaea never did.
No, it didn't. But
yet, it's too early to tell, of course. It happens on a much different time scale, doesn't it?
Yeah. So very slowly, then.
Yeah,
you could be coming back together again very, very slowly.
Very, very slowly, yeah. It could be.
Okay.
If you were in Australia, I'd watch for it.
Because it could happen.
It could happen any day.
What was the last time you played with the guys in the band?
2009, we played at the Glastonbury Festival in outside London, in it's west of London. I forget the county it's in, but it's at Glastonbury, which is on a farm, and it was 130,000 people there, and they stayed. We made them stay. Because they could have gone to another stage, but they stayed. And then we played two nights later at the Wembley Arena in London. And I thought, and with Keith Emerson, the late Keith Emerson was a guest.
Sure. Yeah.
And I thought, great, here we go. And here we didn't go. Now, you know, the phones, you know, stopped ringing.
Okay.
And, of course, the first thing I did was ring round to the telephone company. And they said, no, it's not us. It must be your mate.
Right. Yeah. And that was it.
It was.
You just, again, Pangaea just floating at that point.
Just drifting apart like that. You know, just not fighting, not rancor, not throwing things, because we didn't have that many things to throw.
But so this does mean then you could come back together again for a Spinal Tap.
No,
it'll never happen.
I don't
ever.
Think so. Nigel has got his hands full. Literally, he's raising miniature livestock.
Oh.
Is there
a market for that? Is there a...
Well, I don't know. I don't think... guitarists, Ian, are very extreme kind of personalities.
Right. Yeah.
They don't ask themselves, is there a market for it? They're like Icarus. They fly towards the sun.
It's the creative part.
They get their wings burnt. They come back to Earth. They get sun cream put on them.
Right. And then they do it again.
Yes. So he started with miniature horses.
Yeah.
And he found that he'd gotten them down to the point where he couldn't find jockeys small enough to ride them. And now he turned to goats, you know, livestock.
Goats. Right.
And again, he just keeps pushing too far, and they're too small to milk. But they're lovely. I mean, they're cute. Is the thing.
Really?
Yeah.
How big are they?
Well, it could fit in the palm of two hands.
Okay. All right. That's a very small goat.
Very small goat and very small udders on the goat. On the goat question.
Kind of reminds me, I don't know if you heard this, and it's true that there are, around Arizona, where I live now, there's a lot of wild chihuahuas. And
they bred them, and people didn't want them, and they let them go?
And there's like packs of chihuahuas.
Well, you
of like
be a pack of chihuahuas. They're too tiny to hunt by themselves, aren't they?
Right. But 10 or 15, you know, chihuahuas in some of these towns are roaming around just causing trouble. These little
snarling. It's like people do that. You know, they get these animals. I mean, there's colonies of parrots, wild parrots in Chicago now.
I didn't know this.
Nobody ever thought a parrot could live in Chicago.
Right.
I mean, it's a good theater town, but
right.
Paris aren't big for that.
No, I didn't know. Maybe that's why they're thriving.
Well, maybe they just, you know, it's like a
mutation.
A parrot in the theater would be like, except you know, calling out for his mate to say, "Oh, look, Hamlet's about to do it again."
So Smalls change is your meditations about aging, and you're upon aging. But I mean, at 75, what do you know now about life that you wish you could reach out and tell a young Derek Smalls?
Well, pardon me, I know a bit about the music business, which is, and I would say this to anybody, any young person, not just the young me, because the young me doesn't exist. And other young people do, I believe. People often say the music business is shark-infested waters, Ian.
Right.
And I would say, no, it's not. There's no water, there's just sharks.
Okay.
Don't look for any water in the music business. You won't find any. It's just shark upon shark upon shark. So I've learned that. But, you know, you learn that time gives as well as takes as the years themselves grow older. So there's a song on the record. I don't think we can mention the name of the song, but it's about the joyous conjoining of two toothless orifices, and it's about the fact that time, it can take away, let's say, your teeth in that particular case, but it still gives you the ability to give pleasure to others. So.
Okay.
Time, you know, as the years themselves grow older, this is you see, it's a give and take. It's not just a take, you know, and that's reason enough to persist.
Now, people will often, you know, think that they know you, and you are a celebrity, and people talk about you, and there's a lot of, you know, probably a few urban legends around you. One of those is that. Your son was Biggie Smalls. Is that true or not true?
No, that's not an urban legend. That's actually a rural legend.
It's a rural legend.
Yes, only people in the country think that.
Only the, okay.
Yes.
And that's not true then that you're related to Biggie Smalls.
No, I'm not related to any rapper.
Any rapper, okay.
Yeah, I think I can say that safely.
And Spinal Tap never went disco?
No, we didn't. We went Latin.
Did you go Latin?
Yes, in the Ricky Martin era.
I don't remember this.
We had a song called Back from the Dead. In the second verse, we just went, I think Nigel went, and it was the cue for us to go into a Latin
riff. Little Latin riff.
Yeah, because we were trying to, you know, catch a bit of that Ricky Martin wave. It didn't work out so well, but, you know.
Well,
for us.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad the new album... Again, Smalls Change, working out well. We'll play a little cut from it in just a second.
It's
but
all-star. I mean, it's an all-star record. We call it a solo record, but I mean, it's filled with all these rock and rollers who are, you know, great guitar players, great drummers. You can mention them if you want.
But I mean, we played Stonehenge earlier.
Yes.
And have you actually been to Stonehenge?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. When we were coming back from Glastonbury, and it's on the way from London, or to London from Glastonbury.
But not on the way back from London, right?
I didn't go that way.
Okay.
And we got out, we saw it at the side of the road. It's literally like, you think, well, this is a place for a petrol station. No, it's bloody Stonehenge.
Right.
And you think, well, it's a bit small, isn't it? And the driver said, no, that's the real thing, because there's some fake Stonehenges in England now. There's a Lego Stonehenge just outside of London.
Really?
And we went in, and it's 6:45 in the evening, but it's June, you know, it's middle of summer. And the geezer at the box office says, well, you can go in, but we're going to close at 7, and so you've got to leave in 15 minutes. And our keyboard player, Mr. Vanston, who produced my record this time around, but he was with us on tour, and he said, do you know who these people are? They put this place on the map, and he allowed us to stay in after they closed.
Because nobody really knew about Stonehenge until that album came out?
I guess we did put it on the map. I'd never, you know, been in, even where they make maps, so I didn't know that.
I see. So,
have you?
No, I haven't.
Do you know where they make maps? I mean,
I don't.
It's a mystery, isn't it?
You're right.
You do these shows about mysteries. Why don't you go where they make maps and find out about that?
I'm writing that down right now. But okay. Most importantly, we're gonna roll out with a track from the new album, Smalls Great. Change. Derek Smalls. I hope everybody find this in your local record store. You'll be doing signings around the country and all.
Yes, and we're playing. We're doing a sort of a slow mo tour. We did a date in New Orleans with the Louisiana Philharmonic a couple of weeks ago, and in July 19th at the Kennedy Bloody Center in Washington with the National Symphony. Our live show is called Lukewarm Water Live, and
it's
the launching, the initial world premiere launching of the inflatable pink torpedo.
Well, you made this very special to have it on tonight, and thank you so much, Derek Smalls. We look forward to hearing more about this in the future. God bless you all. And coming up next, Mysteries of the Mojave on Coast to Coast.